tremendous challenges and opportunities exist right now for our nation's water infrastructure. In this podcast, the industry's top leaders and innovative minds share their knowledge and insights for ensuring our water systems are operating safely and efficiently. These discussions are designed to motivate and create vibrant 21st century water systems and the innovative workforce required to lead and operate them. This is 21st Century Water with your host, AquaSight founder and CEO, Mahesh Lunani.
So I'm with Sue McCormick. She's Chief Executive Officer for Great Lakes Water Authority. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning.
I want to thank you for being part of this. You have a stellar career in the water sector. What made you choose water as a career?
You know, well, it was really initially unintentional. I was nearing completion of my undergrad degree and had been working with the university as a chemistry and physics teaching assistant and noted that the local utility had posted a job as an environmental lab tech. They hired me, and shortly thereafter, the drinking water regulatory environment became increasingly more complex. I completed my degree, was promoted to chemist and lab manager, and I was monitoring the changing regulatory environment when apparently I was the right candidate for the new systems planning manager position. And it was when I was there that I recognized the opportunity as the landscape was getting more complex, and there were lots and lots of small systems in and around the city that I was in, to really talk about an opportunity to regionalize. The system that I was working for had a lot of capacity, and most of the systems around us were distributed well systems, and it was going to be very difficult for them to meet the challenges in the increasing regulatory environment. So I worked to put together a group, a structure where we used all of the representatives from 17 different communities, technical reps and governance reps, and we worked together to specify a study and select consultants. And ultimately what came out of that study was that it made sense economically and we could provide better water quality to communities outside of the core city if we would work together to create sort of this regional platform. I was hooked. The idea that you could work in this environment and begin to have communities collaborate with one another for the public benefit was just such an exciting opportunity. 41 years later, here I still am.
So it was an accident. You looked at a listing and turned out to be a stellar career in terms of challenging the status quo, going after major problems. So that's beautiful. In your current role, most of us consider Great Lakes Water Authority as a 4-year-old baby, right?
I'm the only professional who's been in my career for 41 years and still feels like I'm a toddler because of this newly launched organization.
What's the origin of Great Lakes Water System?
You know, here in Southeast Michigan, while discussions of a regional water authority had occurred for some time, probably more than a decade, Great Lakes Water Authority was actually born out of the City of Detroit's bankruptcy. You know, initially Detroit Emergency Manager attempted to monetize the city's water utility and use those proceeds to sustain the city's general fund. These efforts were neither supported by many regional stakeholders nor the municipal bond markets. And eventually, through a confidential mediation process in the city's bankruptcy case, GLWA was born. And the key differences that led to GLWA's birth were, first, the city and the regional stakeholders agreed that a $50 million annual lease payment would be made, but would remain in the system and be used for its benefit. And secondly, the bondholders of the outstanding DWSD debt were asked to voluntarily consent to the transfer of their debt from the City of Detroit to the GLWA, and they were supportive of that, particularly given the perceived risk of having their debt in the bankruptcy portfolio.
So it's really born out of crisis. GLWA has came out of, so to speak, ashes.
I think that's true. It came out of ashes and it was born based on the ability of the major stakeholders to come to this unprecedented agreement about how the funds paid to the city would be used to actually support the water system and not the general fund.
Can you describe how big in numbers the GLWA system? I think it's one of the biggest systems in the country.
We have 5 water treatment plants with a total combined capacity of 1,720 million gallons a day. It's a very big system. We have three water intakes, so we have a lot of flexibility there. We have 112 different communities that we provide primary water service to, and lots of booster pumping stations and over 800 miles of pipeline across a service area that serves better than seven counties and a service population of about 3.9 million people. So it's very, very large. Some might call us a wholesale entity. I don't like that term because it sounds like we're handing off a product at a boundary with other systems. I prefer to think of ourselves as a treatment and services partner with the local systems because we really care about the quality all the way to the tap of everyone that uses water in the region. We also operate a wastewater system, and the wastewater system, similar sort of capacity in one very large wastewater treatment plant who has made the conversion recently to a water resource recovery facility. And we can talk more about that, but we are now making beneficial reuse of about 90% of our biosolids.
Outstanding. That sounds as an incredible responsibility for you to manage water and manage wastewater for over 4 million residents. That's not an easy job.
It's a challenge, but it's an exciting one, and particularly given some of the things that we're able to work together to accomplish in the region.
You're at the forefront of regionalization, which is a big push in the country. And some may consider you as a regional water architect. Just how do you manage a complex where you have 112 water departments, different governances, different priorities, and to be able to still work together in a context to ultimately provide the best water for residents? How does this work?
It's really all about relationship. We have developed a very special process in conjunction with all of the communities that we service. We call it our outreach process. We actually have a partnering agreement that we developed that speaks about the way that we're all going to work together collaboratively. In any given year, we will have 80 to 90 different meetings across a variety of topics where we have common interest. Everything from training and development to public outreach and education to how we're going to develop charges and allocate costs. Working with our member communities, we've developed a model contract on the water side and on the wastewater side that speaks to how each of our member partners is going to be similarly treated. It has a Me Too clause. So if there was any privilege that was granted to a new customer, all of the existing customer communities, our member partners would have the same rights. And so this is a huge process of engagement. When I use the term engagement, it really is about getting as close to consensus decision-making as we can without abdicating our responsibility as the utility operator, but really recognizing that, you know, we don't own a special privilege to anyone. We owe privilege and great service to all of our member partners. And so to the degree that we can work together to come up with an approach that is supportable by everybody, that's the direction that we take.
Can you productize on how you run a regional system? And what I mean by that is you talked about relationships, processes, procedures, right? Best practices. Mm-hmm. Is there a way you can write a book on it saying this is the best practice of running a regional system or setting up a regional system?
Actually, that's an interesting question because there are several of us here who have talked about actually writing a book.
Okay.
Particularly about the way that GLWA was launched and the people, process, technology, and frankly, the team. And I don't want to lose sight of that. When I talk about process and I talk about team, the way that we work internally as an organization is reflected in the way we work externally as an organization. So it really starts with building a solid team of people who share a common vision, who will work together and collaborate for the success of not only the organization, but the success of the region. And then you turn that same approach to the way that we work externally, where we build a team, a collaborative team of people representing the 112 different communities that we serve. And we use the process, the outreach process, as a way of orchestrating the interaction. And frankly, I do believe that that approach is what has made us advance as quickly as we have as an organization and a region on both the water and the sewer fronts.
I think BOOC is a terrific idea. The country needs it. So what you're saying is you can productize this concept of what you have deployed and developed along with the team. The question is governance, because the governance have to allow you to execute on what I consider an incredibly difficult challenge. How does this work in your case?
Well, the governance is interesting for GLWA. Again, when we launched out of the bankruptcy, there were major players in that process. I mentioned that we serve a number of counties, but the three core counties that we serve, particularly the three counties that we serve wastewater, and also the majority of the water communities, are in Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb counties in Southeast Michigan. Those executives from those three counties worked with the mayor of the city of Detroit and representatives of the state of Michigan government to form the authority. And when they did that, the governance is actually each of those parties has appointing authority to the GLWA board. The state appoints a representative to represent the populations that are outside of the three core. There's a representative from Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb, each of those three appointed by their chief executives. And then the mayor of the city of Detroit has the ability to appoint two representatives. And that gives me a six-member board. Now, an even number, pardon the pun, is odd in most governing boards because it's very easy to have a tie. But the founding members were wise and really built this on the ideal of consensus to the degree that any major decision, things like adopting a budget, deciding to go to market and issue bonds, adopting a capital improvement plan, setting the annual charges, hiring a CEO, these all require five out of the six board members to agree. And so it was really built around a consensus process. I can tell you that it's really worked quite well. It really means that people have to, you know, whether we're talking about the outreach process or whether we're talking in the governance process, we're basically operating by consensus.
Can you state a couple of real examples of how a high-performance utility like Great Lakes Water Authority actually made a difference?
One of the things that launching the Regional Authority did right at the start, I mentioned that all of the debt from the City of Detroit system, the DWSD system, was moved to the authority. And one of the things that we were able to do very quickly was reestablish bond ratings and based on our own merit. Those bond ratings being reestablished have now allowed us to go through refinancings of our bonds to upgrade our credit rating, if you will, through the rating agencies. Those savings then can be returned to the system in a variety of ways. It has really assisted us in minimizing our annual charge adjustments. And I'll give you an example. When we launched the authority, DWSD had established a cadence of annual charge adjustments that were fairly modest at about 4% per year. It was quite an improvement over the 8% per year that had been experienced previously. So when the authority was launched, again, the folks that were at the table made a promise to the region that the authority would be able to hold annual charge adjustments to no greater than 4% for the first 10 years of the authority. The first year the authority was launched, we were mid-year. We already had a 4% adjustment on the books that was put in place by DWSD. The very next year, our charge adjustments were 2%. And since that time, we have not had a charge adjustment of greater than 1%. Last year, our charge adjustment on water was 0.3%, and we actually had a reduction on the sewer side of 0.1%. I'm saying on average. Because of the way that costs are allocated to individual communities, they might experience something greater or something less than that. But on average, the annual revenue requirement went up by that amount. And so that is quite an accomplishment in fairly short order. And a good piece of that is the savings that we've been able to achieve as some of the refundings have been executed, as well as other efficiencies that we're building as an organization.
To me, that's an outstanding story to have a system prior with 8% rate increase and in its new form, 1% rate increases for the residents. It's a real success story and testimony of how the regionalization concept really worked in your case.
I agree. And in other ways of measuring success, you know, we pride ourselves on continuous improvement and transparency. And so we use the effective utility model and key performance indicators across a variety of things in the operation, certainly in the areas of things like infrastructure strategy and performance. We've been really tracking our wastewater and water preventative maintenance management and have made huge strides from the launch of the authority till now in getting those up into good benchmark comparisons with utilities across the country. And so we calculate these measures monthly. We share them with our board. We put them on our website. Sort of the mental model that we're using is if it's important, it should be said. It should be in writing. And if it's in writing, it should be measured. And what we're finding is that by putting those measurements on the wall for the organization to see, we have achieved significant improvements. And so, again, I think that the idea of using effective utility management and KPIs continues to drive improvements in the organization in a variety of areas of performance. And then each year we take a look at, okay, now that we've achieved benchmark performance with our service sector in one particular area, where is it that we need to go next in the vein of continuous improvement?
Clearly, I see this as worthy of a book. What would be the table of contents of that book look like for you?
Yeah, it would really start with people. An organization where people work together effectively for the benefit of each other and the team, that really is the start of it. For me, it starts with, you know, people have used the term culture. We prefer the term DNA. It's in the DNA of the organization that the team members that are here see themselves as something bigger than themselves, and they will work together to help everybody be effective, not just the small team that they're on, but the organization team. And so we have a mantra, one water, one team. We're all in this together, and the organization has to be successful as a whole in order to really serve our member partners well. So I would start with people. The next is process. We look from a continuous improvement standpoint. We look at all of our business processes across the organization. We look at our treatment processes. We're always looking for, is there another way to either improve our effectiveness or our efficiency? And it all comes down to process, documented process, and a process that can be executed effectively, whether it's a purchasing process or whether it's our outreach process. Processes have to be defined and known in order for people to execute them. The next is technology. Technology is really a leverage point. You know, I will say that our sector is probably a little slow to adopt technology, but technology is a leverage point. Using it in our business processes, I think, is something that we're more willing to do quickly, but certainly in our treatment processes, technology is slower to adopt. It's very expensive, and it's also, you know, people like the tried and true. And so new technologies in treatment are a little slower to adopt, but certainly people, process, and technology. And high-performance teams can produce significantly better results in shorter time frame. You know, a really good example of that, Mahesh, is when we launched the authority. Think of this as, you know, a big organization that is being, this is a split, right? So we left a local system with GWSD and we launched a regional system. Now, if you saw this happen in the private sector, the kind of time frame for that to happen, particularly if the newly launched organization had to stand itself up, hire everybody, put all of your practices and technology in place just for a stand up, you're talking about a 2 to 3 year process. When the decision was made and the trigger was pulled that the authority was actually going to happen, we launched an organization and did all of that in 6 months. There's no way that would have happened if we didn't have a team here at GLWA at all levels in the organization that could keep the wheels on the bus and accomplish all of that in 6 months.
Sounds like a team that should get on a roadshow throughout the country.
Well, I'm very proud of the team. I'm very, very proud of the team.
And you should be. You know, you're 41 years in the water sector. You have a great amount of wisdom, worked across multiple utilities, and you also have a view of the future for this sector, mm-hmm. in this country. whether it's evolution on technology, evolution on regulatory, or evolution from a climate change point of view. What would define the water leader of the future? What should be the traits of that person moving forward, not looking back in the rearview mirror, but moving forward?
I think it is especially important for water leaders to balance tenacity with humility and to model that behavior for their teams. And most importantly, remember that they're responsible for protecting the waters of their states and region, and that what they are producing as a product is what people ingest. And so that real focus on public health. And I think that's where they have to be grounded. Now, what they do, the sector is becoming increasingly more complex. It's not going to get any simpler. And so it is important for the leaders of today to have an organization that is going to be able to continually move forward and adjust. That means making a huge investment in the ongoing development of their teams to make sure that they are planning for succession through mentoring, modeling, and education. And then I think as we look to the future, the advancement of our sector in technology, artificial intelligence, machine learning, we're going to have to make sure that those are all highly utilized for our success as we continue to optimize the services we provide. And last but certainly not least, to do all of this in an environment where we actually engage the public and that we are transparent and not invisible. We have been invisible underground for a long time, and it's really only through what we've seen in terms of environmental crises and rising rates and the conversations around affordability that we've become apparent to the public. That's not the way we should be operating. We should be apparent to the public as a sector that plays a critical role in the success of society and communities and the public health of the people of our country, and that we are a valued place to spend our careers. Certainly, I said I came to this sort of by accident. I don't know that very many of our counselors in our school systems or our colleges are talking about careers in water.
That's right.
So I think we have a lot of work to do to make sure that we are responsible utilities, but that we are also making ourselves more apparent, and more apparent to the educators, more apparent to the public. And a big piece of that is, I'll go back to the engagement word. I think we have to engage the public more, and we have to engage partners in education and technology development as well.
Sounds like it's an incredibly hard leader to find. Yeah. Tenacity, humility, public technology savvy, public awareness, public health. I mean, it is, you almost feel like you need to develop these leaders with their skill sets. It's not going to naturally come.
I think that is true.
So how do you develop it? How would you develop water leaders of the future in this country?
You know, one of the things that I saw missing in the curriculum, only by retrospect, and I talk about this in orientation as we orient new team members to GLWA, and that is this incredible responsibility that we have, but also the fact that every decision that we make every day has to be grounded in ethics, and that we have to be brave about raising issues, and we have to trust our gut in terms of what we do right. That's missing in curriculum. You know, the rest is you have to know the science and you have to know the technology, and those things can be taught easily. It's really the management approach that we take. And I know what works for me. I think it will work for others.
Right.
Where I've seen some systems struggle, even systems that are currently regional today, and systems are looking to depart from regional systems, it's because of the, I believe, because of the lack of healthy relationship and the lack of healthy engagement. And if people are engaged, they will support what they create. If they're not engaged, it's somebody else's, not theirs. And so this is, I think, a philosophy that I think is important as we look to address many of the challenges in this sector that are much more difficult for smaller systems and will likely require some scaling up. Doesn't necessarily have to be complete physical consolidation, but it will require partnering. And partnering can only work if we are engaging each other and share the decision-making process. And I think that's what really has to be taught.
So while you were talking, Sue, there's an idea that came across my mind, and I want to run this. What if there is 100 water sector leaders? We create a mentorship program, right? Today, mentorship is typically viewed as a mentor if you are within the same organization. But if somebody in Houston or Atlanta or in Dallas say, I want you to be a mentor for me, right? And it's probably takes 2 hours, an hour, a month for have a conversation. Do you think that level of countrywide mentorship program allow us to build the next generation leaders where the mentorship is not linked to a specific organization, but across organizations?
It's an interesting concept. And I think you will find people, including myself, that would be very interested in participating in something like that. It is only as successful as people are willing to be mentored,
right?
In addition to offering to mentor others, but to be mentored. I always believe that we, as individuals, we have a lot to learn. As knowledgeable as we may think ourselves, we always have much to learn.
Right.
I certainly believe I have much to learn. 41 years doesn't mean I know all. I have lots to learn. I also have things that I think can be shared with others. And so for me, it sounds like a great idea. I don't know how willing we will find the country.
Right. Well, we always have to try ideas to see if it works. So let me move on. Can you convert water sector as a growth sector? It's considered a stagnant industry, right? Archaic. Is there a way to convert this into a growth sector? Like a job growth and technological growth and innovators coming in and wanting to try new things. Is it possible?
I think the changing environment will make it more possible. Again, I would go back to 41 years ago when I entered the sector, some of the leading people in the regulatory environment were frustrated by the fact that regulations were changing, and they thought that we had already addressed what was important to public health when we began disinfecting water and removing heavy metals. They thought that was it. Water was good. And look at where we are today. So the sector is changing and moving, but it's moving more slowly, I think, than other sectors in the world are. Now, I will say, I'm glad that I have operators who are not anxious to tweak a bunch of dials every day to change things because they know that the unquestionable quality of water that they're producing today will be the same tomorrow if they do the same things tomorrow that they did today. Monitor the water coming in, make sure that the treatment process is working effectively, monitor the water going out of the plants, monitor the water in the distribution system. It's stable. Tomorrow we may find that there's something we didn't know existed today and you have to make a change. But generally, those things are far and few between for any one particular utility. And so there is a stability in that that is, from their view, critical to having water of unquestionable quality. And ultimately, that's our objective.
Right.
When we talk about making change, it has to be change for that particular part of our operation that has to guarantee them success before they will make the change. That's probably the biggest area of challenge with regards to change. In business operations, in utilities, I think there's much more willingness to change and to do that more rapidly. Again, I think the challenge for many utilities is being able to support it financially, and particularly where it's going to have an impact on rates to the local consumers. Very difficult for the local governance boards to make those changes unless there's a pretty healthy payback, a pretty good return on investment. Will the improvement actually fund itself? And if there's a short-term price to pay, it may be a barrier to the long-term benefit, the longer-term benefit. So I think there are some roadblocks, and some of that really comes down to each individual utility and their relationship with their board and their board's view about what's appropriate for the public impact. So from a growth for jobs, I see it a little differently. Our sector is very challenged with regards to finding the right talent and being able to compete for that talent. I'm happy to say that some of the newer generations are looking for more than just a job. They're looking for an opportunity to make a difference. And I do think we can do a much better job of making the difference that we make in the world and in our communities more obvious, and that that will be appealing to many who are particularly entering the workforce. Now, I do think that we're going to have to make some investments in our ability to develop that talent, whether it be by partnerships with the universities and the junior colleges, or whether it be by apprenticeship programs more locally oriented. But I do think that we have a terrific need in our sector today to be able to grow and develop the talent that we need to operate these very complex systems.
What you're saying is it is a growth market as far as jobs are concerned.
It is.
And it's also a growth market when you look at a business operations efficiency, but it is a conservative market when it comes to providing public health or public service and operations.
Guaranteed results. That's really the biggest challenge, is making sure that we can guarantee the best results.
So I want to ask you, if you've been given a magic wand, and it is about how would you structure the water sector in the U.S., which is highly, highly decentralized, what would your response be with that magic wand?
You know, local governments love having local water utilities, and many of them are very successful at doing just that. But some are not. And some are not because of a making of their own. It may be that they have exceptional challenges. Maybe it's a water quality challenge. Maybe it's an economic challenge. I believe over time that an effective approach for the sector will likely mean that we have larger utilities in, use the state model, larger utilities in a state having a regional responsibility to support utilities in their portion of a state. Now, that could come in a variety of forms. It could come in physical consolidation. It could come in management support. It could come in operation support. It could come in purchasing and procurement support, technology support. But I do think that ultimately we need a model that will assure the success of this service for the entire country. I do believe that that type of, whether you call it consolidation or regionalization, again, I think it can take many forms, but I think there has to be an assigned responsibility in order to get there.
Okay, fascinating. So last question, give us one deep insight about water that everyone should know. With your 41 years experience, what would be that deep insight about water?
If I were speaking to the public, I would say, it's much more complex than you understand, because at its nature, water is a solvent. It's a universal solvent. Everything that water comes in contact with will be in the water in some amount. There's no such thing as pure H2O, hydrogen and oxygen forming water molecules, because water is a universal solvent. So treatment of water is very complex. Getting it to the public is even more complex. When you consider the system of pipes and valves and pumps and storage vessels, et cetera, maintaining its quality all the way to the consumer's tap means it's a partnership, because everything that happens in your home can affect your quality as well. The type of plumbing that you have and the fixtures that you use. We have to become more intelligent as a society about understanding how complex this service really is.
Excellent. Excellent.
So people think about water as what easily comes out of their tap, and it's ubiquitous all around, but water is critically important to support community economic development efforts. For example, the nearby mains are essential when planning a housing development. Quarter main replacement with street paving allows a community to leverage its investments. All of those activities create jobs. And as we reduce our carbon footprint, it may one day be possible for utilities to create energy from waste. And of course, because jobs follow residents, green infrastructure plays a key role in livable communities and attracting residents and ultimately jobs. Remember, water is more than just what comes out your tap. It's the community's fire protection. It's a jobs creator. I could probably count 7 different services that we are in as water utilities. And I don't believe the public understands any of that.
So it's water not just for drinking.
That's right.
You're saying it does for so many other reasons you need the water. And that's why the utilities, utility leaders play such an important role in the community and the community development. Fascinating. I want to thank you, Sue, for your time.
All right. Thank you, Mahesh.
Join host and AquaSite founder and CEO Mahesh Lunani again next month for another episode of 21st Century Water. Subscribe for free in Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or Stitcher. Produced by Jag and Detroit Podcasts.